Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I am your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Clear skies tonight and tomorrow again, with highs expected in the low 80s. Wednesday is expected to be mostly sunny with a small chance of thunderstorms in the morning. And Wednesday night, thunderstorms and showers are expected. But on Thursday, sunny weather with a high around 87. Showers and thunderstorms are expected at the end of the week again on Thursday and Friday, but the weekend should start sunny and pleasant with a high of 81 on Saturday. In today's show, a community-based clinic. And in case you did not know this, Ames has a sister city in Japan. We'll hear about all that. And a new chapter in the story of the Dakota Access Pipeline. On Saturday, approximately 40 people gathered at the banks of the Des Moines River at Norton's Ford Put-In, northwest of Boone, to participate in a brigade of canoes and kayaks making up the second annual flotilla protest against the Dakota Access Pipeline that now pumps crude oil under the river just north of the County Highway E18 bridge.
Good morning, water protectors. We are here today to celebrate this precious, nurturing Des Moines River that has been flowing through this valley since before humans arrived. We celebrate because we know in our minds, we feel through our beating hearts, and we sense deep in our souls that water is life.
This is Becky Hall with 100 Grannies for a Livable Future, and I'm here with a couple other grannies fighting for our grandchildren to have a livable future and all grandchildren in the world so they can have clean water and clean air and clean, healthy food. So that's why we're here today. You know, if we're not watching them, because nobody else seems to be. You know, I used to think the government was taking care of us, but no.
My name is Lisa Lai. I live in Ames, and this is so important because it encompasses so many issues that are just at a tipping point right now, from global warming to water quality to eminent domain to how our country has historically treated indigenous populations. It's just really, really important.
I'm Leona McDade, and I am from Boone, Iowa. I live out in the country. In fact, I live on E18. And I didn't know what the pipeline was, and I didn't become aware of it till the summer of 2015. And we had lived in Boone like 30-some years, and we decided we wanted to move out in the country, and we found this property on E18 in July, and then we decided to purchase it. And after we moved in, we heard about the pipeline, and the more I looked into it, I realized the pipeline was going to go right behind my house. I walked it off last summer, and our well is only 200 feet from the pipeline, and so I became more educated about what the pipeline was, and definitely I am against it.
My name's Angie Carter, and I'm the seventh generation of my family to call Iowa home. So I'm really excited to be here today to get on the water with my friends that I've made the past 3 years through this work, and to keep this work alive, because we know that we have an ongoing threat to our water in Iowa. You know, we should be able to drink our water without question.
My name is Miriam Kasia. I live in North Liberty, Iowa, just outside of Iowa City. Born and raised in Iowa. I'm a full-time activist. In 2014, I walked with a small group of other folks on the Great March for Climate Action from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C. I walked every step across the United States. Mm-hmm. I was 71 at the time. Mm-hmm. So we slept on the ground. We camped most of the time. In addition to presenting rallies and potlucks and church basements and talking to people along the way and visiting schools, the mission of our Great March for Climate Action was to sound the alarm as if we were modern-day Paul Revere's. Sound the alarm and motivate people and educate people about the crisis that we're facing. But I think the biggest impact was how it changed us, those of us who did this march. Yeah. What I saw, what I witnessed, what I heard, the stories I heard from people who are living through this crisis, the sacrifice zones we walked through where poor people or people of color are being targeted for the fossil fuel refineries and so forth, because who cares? They have no political power. I mean, I started out being knowledgeable about the climate crisis, or I wouldn't have done this. But I ended up knowing the impact. I don't have much in the way of material resources, but I have my health, I have my feet, I have my voice. I'll talk to anybody who listened to me, and I do. I never, in my wildest dreams, ever imagined I would spend my retirement this way. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine now not doing it.
This is Brenda Brink. I'm from near Huxley, and I've been involved with Angie and 100 Grannies for the last 3 years. And so we're encouraged, and we're just here celebrating the river and a little rain.
Stop the pipeline.
We don't want it. Shut it down.
The rights of ecosystems are one and the same as rights for human beings. They all need to be protected.
Story County did a survey of their drain tiles, and they had 200 tiles per mile. 200 tiles per mile. And they're at various levels, various depths. So no matter where the spill is, if it hits that tile system, it's going to the water. It's going to flow downhill. So that's the different part about these other states. Iowa has the most tiles, the most opportunity for it to get into our drinking water. How long of a flow
from here? I'm a farmer. I'm from a century family farm. And I want to keep my farm for my future generations. I don't want any soil oil. No, I don't want any soiled soil. There.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't want any soil soiled by oil. About that. Wow, that's a bumper sticker.
Saturday's flotilla was organized by the Bakken Pipeline Resistance Coalition, a coalition of Iowa organizations in opposition to the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline through Iowa. When a flotilla was held last year at this time, the protesters were hoping to prevent the pipeline from being laid under the river. They were unsuccessful. The pipeline now runs under the Des Moines River, but just 3 days prior to this year's flotilla, news came down that brought them new hope. Carolyn Raffensperger is chair of the Iowa chapter of the Sierra Club and executive director of the National Science and Environmental Health Network, and she explained what this means to Iowa during a press conference next to the river, right before the boats were put in the water.
I wanted to tell you why we're celebrating today rather than, doing the Viking morning, barge down the river with flaming bodies. And that's because we actually have something to celebrate. A federal judge said that the Army Corps of Engineers had not done a good job in assessing all of the dimensions of their permit. Of the permit that they gave to Dakota Access. And so they have sent that back to the Army Corps of Engineers to do their due diligence on that. And you know what that means? It means that Dakota Access does not have a federal permit, an Army Corps of Engineers permit. And do you know what that means?
Shut it down!
So you know what that means for Iowa? The Iowa Utilities Board gave the Iowa permit to Dakota Access on the grounds and the basis that they a condition that they have the federal permit. They don't have a federal permit now, and we believe that they must shut it down to be, if the Iowa Utilities Board is going to follow its own law, its own rule. Now, what is Dakota Access going to argue? They're going to say, oh, the judge didn't make us shut down the oil, so Iowa shouldn't bother. That is not a relevant argument, and here's why. The court made a decision, ruled in favor of the tribes, and he has not decided on the remedy for the violation of the law and the NEPA and other National Environmental Policy Act considerations. So he hasn't decided on a remedy. The remedy is how do you fix the erroneous giving of that permit. So they're going to say, well, they didn't shut it down, so we shouldn't shut down Iowa. That's not what the Iowa permit says. The Iowa permit says only if they don't have the federal permit, then the Iowa permit does not exist and must be void and revoked. And so it's very simple. No permit, federal permit, no Iowa permit. It must be revoked. And we filed a motion before the Iowa Utilities Board on Thursday making that case. So any of you who intervened or who wrote in letters, join us. Write a letter to the Iowa Utilities Board and also insist that they void that. Write letters to the newspapers and tell why. We need to make sure that people follow the law. If a 16-year-old did not have a permit to drive, we would not say, oh, well, he's been driving for 2 months, so we'll let him keep on driving. We don't let that happen. So even though the Dakota Access thought they had a permit, they do not, and they must be shut down. Woo! And we are here to say this is not over. This is not a done deal, and we are together. We stand firm that this pipeline must be shut down. Yeah. Thank you
so much. We don't want it. Shut it down. We don't want it. Shut it down.
We don't want it.
Shut it down.
We don't want it.
Shut it down.
We don't want it.
Shut it down.
No permit, no pipeline. No permit,
no pipeline.
No permit,
no pipeline.
No permit,
no pipeline.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and you heard Carolyn Raffensperger with the Iowa Sierra Club and Executive Director of the National Science and Environmental Health Network explaining how the events have unfolded in the past week. On Wednesday, June 14th, a federal judge ruled in favor of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe in North Dakota, handing this tribe its first legal victory in its battle against the Dakota Access Pipeline. The suit, Standing Rock Sioux Tribe versus the U.S. Corps of Army Engineers, starts out with these words. Since the founding of this nation, the United States' relationship with the Indian tribes has been contentious and tragic. This case also features what an American Indian tribe believes is an unlawful encroachment on its heritage. More specifically, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has sued the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to block the operation of the Corps' permitting Dakota Access Pipeline. It should actually be noted that the body of water that's in question here was actually a reservoir that was built by the Army Corps of Engineers, which flooded a significant part of their reservation. The ruling calls out the president's executive orders from January, which allowed construction to move forward without addressing the local concerns of protesters. James Boasberg, who sits on the D.C. District Court, said that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers failed to perform an adequate study of the pipeline's environmental consequences when it first approved its construction. Boasberg wrote, "The court agrees that the Corps did not adequately consider the impacts of an oil spill or environmental justice. The Army Corps of Engineers in North Dakota failed to address or even mention significant expert criticism of the agency's oil spill risk, and that their analysis of it was inadequate. The court found that the Corps never adequately considered the impacts of an oil spill on the Standing Rock Tribe's treaty rights, which include protecting the tribe's right to hunt and fish on tribal lands. And finally, the court found that the Corps' environmental justice analysis was unlawful because it adopted a half-mile buffer to assess oil spill risks, and when studies showed that oil spills could reach far beyond half a mile. The court did not order the pipeline to be shut off until a new environmental study is completed. Attorneys will appear before Boasberg again to make arguments about whether the pipeline should be operating or not." I asked Carolyn Raffensperger about the bigger picture within these court cases, the legal process involved with the fight over this pipeline going diagonally through the Midwest.
Not only do we have a federal court activity, you know, and decision, you bet we're working every angle. We actually have our own court case. We have a lawsuit that we've brought by the Sierra Club and by landowners. They were combined into one lawsuit challenging the Iowa Utilities Board's permit, and is now being appealed to the Iowa Supreme Court. So I think the point is, for people who are listening who said, oh, this is a done deal, is that it's not a done deal until all of our legal remedies have been exhausted. And those will not be exhausted for the lifetime of this pipeline.
So based on this decision, there's a possibility that other states can get back involved?
Absolutely. Yes. There are four states that have been involved in this. Illinois, they had individuals, an individual who filed before their Illinois Commerce Commission, which is the equivalent of our Iowa Utilities Board, on her own, without a lawyer. Never been done before. And they said, you can't do that. And an administrative law judge said, oh, yes, she can. And so then she used so much of the material that we generated here in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And then South Dakota had really put on a very vociferous case before their Public Utilities Commission. And so they're now looking at, you know, similar kinds of things. What can they do based on their permit? Let's say we lose every court case, every permitting authority goes against us, every single one. And then the first leak happens. And then we've got another shot at this. And we are going to take every opportunity we can to protect the water of Iowa and of North Dakota and South Dakota and Illinois. Every opportunity we can. We are not going to give up. I think of the last creature on the ship that's just going down, and you scramble up to the top and you hang on even with a toenail, and then you jump to the iceberg and you do everything you can. And we are going to do everything we can to protect this place, this water, these waters, these children. You probably heard the children in the background. We do this for them, so that they have an earth, so that they have drinkable water, so they have a climate that's stable. You know what's really interesting is if you think that there is no future, you think that tomorrow is the last day that, you know, you'll be on earth or there will be no children, that this is the last generation of children, there is an existential despair that is antithetical to how our psyches can function. And so without some kind of hope that we can pass on a future, some kind of assumption that our struggle is worth it and that there will be surprises all along the way, I don't think we can survive. Otherwise, why not just give up? But what I think that what we've seen this week is not giving up yet. And we have a toehold. You may find the lifeboat yet. We've had a divest and defund campaign so that we've gotten major banks of nations that have pulled out of Dakota Access. And their stock price dropped after the court decision. I do believe that the people who are aware, who care about these things, is growing.
As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sisters, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sisters, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, brothers, let's go down, come on down. Come on, brothers, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, fathers, let's go down, come on down. Oh, fathers, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, mothers, let's go down, come on down, don't you want to go down? Come on, mothers, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear
sinners, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sinners, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sinners, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sinners, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown, good Lord, show me the way.
This is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. In December 2013, the Iowa State Daily wrote this report. By next year, in Ames, under the Affordable Care Act, there will be a primary health care facility which will receive funds from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and they're working to get everything together to open it. Linda Hansen is the clinic director of primary health care here in Story County. She has come to describe the clinic. Linda, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The clinic describes its mission as serving those that experience barriers to receiving care. Can you explain what that mission means, what the purpose of the clinic is?
Sure. So community health centers traditionally are designed to serve those who are underserved. So they may be uninsured or underinsured, or people living in poverty who have other significant barriers to care, transportation barriers, or perhaps we're telling them to eat healthy and they don't have access to adequate food, may not have adequate employment, may have mental health issues that are affecting their ability to live quality lives or to receive quality health care. And so we work with that population principally, although anybody's welcome to come to our clinic. So
you're kind of a safety net in the community in the area of health.
We try to be, certainly. Mm-hmm.
And what is the Iowa Primary Care Association? You have clinics in Des Moines and Marshalltown as well?
Correct. So the Primary Care Association is an association of community health centers in Iowa. Primary health care has clinics in Des Moines, Marshalltown. We have a dental clinic in Des Moines and Marshalltown, two dental clinics in Des Moines now and one in Marshalltown. We have various projects. One is the Ryan White HIV Project in Des Moines, and then we have a homeless advocacy project in Des Moines as well. Here in Ames, we have the medical clinic, which is a family practice medical clinic, and we're the newest medical clinic.
So you're an Iowa organization?
Primary health care is only in Iowa, uh-huh. Yes.
And are you essentially a nonprofit organization or are you a government agency?
We're a nonprofit organization. Community health centers receive funding from the federal government to serve underserved people. One of the very few things in our federal government that gets bipartisan support. And it's been shown that providing basic primary care, family practice level care, can prevent hospital admissions, emergency department admissions, and actually save money. Managing people's health care is a good way to spend money to save money in the long run. And so both political parties support community health centers pretty broadly.
And do you cooperate with McFarland and Mary Greeley?
Yes, absolutely. They're some of our many partners in the community, particularly with obstetrical services, which we're going to talk about today. We have our midwives partner with the midwives at McFarland. Our midwives can't be on call 24/7, and they back us up. The obstetricians at McFarland back up our midwives for emergency situations or cesarean sections. And then Mary Greeley, of course, where our moms principally deliver their babies, and mm-hmm. They've both been great partners for us.
And where are you located?
We're located in West Ames at 3510 Lincoln Way.
So you're kind of the building next to the big Hy-Vee McFarland complex?
Correct. Uh-huh. Yeah, just to the east of that.
Just to the east of that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're speaking with Linda Hansen, clinic director of the primary health care for Story County, and Caitlin Hamley is with us as well. Caitlin is a certified nurse midwife at the clinic. Welcome, Caitlin.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Caitlin, I understand that there is an expansion going on in the midwife and prenatal services, and that you have a new program that you're launching. Describe what's going on.
Yeah, so primary health care started with one midwife in Ames, Megan Sloat, who couldn't be with us today. And they're expanding their midwifery program. I just came on board a couple months ago because it's starting to get busy. And one of the amazing new programs that we're doing is called Centering. And it's a group prenatal program. So instead of moms coming in kind of having their 15-minute prenatal visits with their provider, they come in with a group of other moms in the same sort of gestation of pregnancy, and they get to spend 2 hours together with those other moms and with the midwife, and they get to be involved in their own care. They get to start making some community connections, and they get to spend more time with the midwives.
So the operating principle of this program is that it's a coordinated program that brings together support and a lot of community connections. Is that what?
Yeah, absolutely. I think community connections is the core, one of the cores of the Centering program. Moms making connections with other moms in their community, and you know, as midwives, we can counsel them on evidence-based research, suggestions, and courses of action. But it's nice to hear from other moms what's working for them. And so that's a great part of it. Plus, it's just a great mix of diversity, different socioeconomics, racial diversity. It really, really has brought people together in the community, and some of those relationships that are forged in these prenatal centering groups, it can last, you know, even after their babies are born.
How long has this program been going on now?
We started this in March of this year, so.
Oh, so it's very new.
It's very new. We haven't graduated our first group yet, so that will be in August. We currently have 5 or 6 groups going, though, which is more than we anticipated, so it seems like it's a pretty popular model of care.
So how many folks do you have in the group?
The size of the groups vary from 5 moms to, I think we have one group that's got 8 to 10 in it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of aim for about 8 moms, and then they can also bring a support person, either a spouse, partner, mom, sister, whatever. Mm-hmm. Some support person can come with them.
And how often do they actually meet? They meet at the clinic?
You meet at the clinic, and it's similar to traditional care. In traditional care, you usually get about 10 prenatal visits over the course of your pregnancy, and it's the same for centering. It's replacing their prenatal care visits. It's just that the visits are, instead of a few minutes with a provider, they're much longer. There's much more opportunity for education and answering questions and group building. It's also fun. We do activities that, you know, like we talk about, for example, the one on discomforts of pregnancy. A lot of, especially new moms, are like, is this normal? Is it normal for my back to hurt? And is it normal for me to have headaches? And what's normal? And so being in a group where you hear from everybody in the group saying, yeah, I'm having headaches and back pain too, normalizes those things. And then how do we help get through that? So one of the activities is we made socks with rice in them that you can heat up in the microwave and put on your back. So we actually do activities that address their particular issues and make it kind of fun and helps build the team a little bit more.
So what's the first thing that you say to folks when they join this group?
One of the first things we do is listen to baby's heartbeat, take a measurement. It's really important for moms to be involved in those things. They want to hear how their baby's growing, and they want to see how their baby's growing, and they want to talk about it.
One of the things I think is really fun with the group is that when the group is together, they do their belly checks in the same space behind a room divider. So everybody gets to hear everybody else's baby over the Doppler. And so, and you'll just see their faces kind of light up when that heartbeat comes on, and they can all hear everybody else's baby. And they're like, oh, your baby's heart rate's faster. Or, you know, it's really fun. They get involved in each other's baby care and their excitement over hearing the babies.
I can imagine then that they would end up wanting to actually see the babies because they get to know them at such an, you know, at the early age.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. There's actually a reunion at the end when all the moms bring their babies back and we have a party at the end. Uh-huh. We haven't done that yet because we haven't graduated a group, but that's the plan.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes,
lots of cuteness going around.
Yeah.
Caitlin, are you the leader of the program, or are you one of the leaders?
So up to this point in time, Megan Sloat has been the primary leader, midwife leader for the centering program. Since I've come on board, I've trained with Megan, and I'll be, we'll each have our own groups going forward.
What do you take away from this? What have you learned from the process?
You know, I'm just a big fan of how people come together. You know, we do see everybody individually for at least their first appointment. And, you know, sometimes you can kind of think, wow, you know, all of these, you know, five people are going to be in the same group. I just don't know about that. They seem very different. But within a group, people come together and they really find out that they have a lot in common with each other. And they might have never had the chance to find that out. So I think it's just about, you know, getting people in the door. And once that happens, people find a way to focus on things they have in common. And that's a really beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Has there been research to find that actually this program makes birthing a better experience?
Yeah, there's actually quite a bit of evidence around this program. March of Dimes, for example, is really pushing this program because it's so evidence-based to improve health outcomes. In particular, low birth weights decrease when you provide adequate education to moms. Breastfeeding initiation increases, which is healthier for moms. The other thing that I found really amazing is that there's a lot of disparities in outcomes amongst different racial and ethnic groups, and those seem to disappear with centering. They just go away. And so because of that evidence, there's like the Kellogg Foundation and National Institute of Health and March of Dimes. There's a lot of even state Board of Health are pushing this and providing better insurance coverage for it in some states just because the outcomes are so much better for this mm-hmm. program.
And that's combined with the fact that, you know, midwifery care research really backs up midwifery care as having great outcomes, lower rates of cesarean, lower rates of assisted deliveries. So it's sort of this combined, it's just this combined good of, you know, the benefits you get of midwifery and the benefits you get of centering.
So there's a synergy. Mm-hmm.
And also a higher patient satisfaction, moms feeling heard, moms feeling like their questions get answered. And also I think another really important aspect of this is allowing the moms to take control of their health. So, for example, we train them in how to take their own blood pressure and measure their own gestational age and measure their own weight and record it themselves. And so it's being advocates for their own health, which is also an amazing thing to see.
Is this the only program of its kind here in Story County?
Yes, absolutely. In more than Story County, right?
Yeah, it's the only kind of the only program of its kind in Story County, definitely, and Polk County as well. I don't think anybody else is doing centering pregnancy right now.
I think the other centering pregnancies are like the University of Iowa and over on the eastern edge of Iowa and the western edge. I think we're the only ones, as far as I know, in central Iowa.
Who are doing it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So can if somebody's listening to the show and thinking, wow, I'd like to be part of that program, is this open to anybody, or do you have to have certain qualifications to be part of the program?
It's open to any pregnant woman who's using the services of primary health care. So we would welcome anyone to come and check out our midwifery services and what we have to offer and see if it's a right fit for them.
And are there qualifications for being a client of primary health care?
Nope, anybody's welcome. Anybody with insurance, without insurance, we're open to seeing whoever wants to have our services. And so any pregnant mom could come establish care with us. And
so regardless of income level, whether you're high or low, you're still welcome to be part of this program.
Correct.
Well, it sounds like the clinic is really striving to keep a very high standard of programming. Before we go, what other programs?
One of the other new programs that we've added is we've kind of started a mini lactation clinic. I'm also an international board certified lactation consultant, so that's the highest level you can get as far as lactation training. There was no current lactation clinic there at primary health care before, and so now we're seeing moms with breastfeeding problems and just helping moms along the normal breastfeeding journey. So that's one of the things that we've added that has just been a really great asset for the community and for the clients of primary health care.
I'm speaking with Caitlin Hamley, who is a certified nurse midwife, and also with Linda Hansen, the primary health care director. Do you have a website?
We do. It's a general primary health care website, phciowa.org.
phciowa.org.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today's show. Did you know that Ames has a sister city? It's in Japan. It's called Kyushu City.
Kyushu City.
And Lauren Franson from the Ames Chamber of Commerce went recently to Kyushu City as part of the Ames delegation to our sister city. And Lauren's here to tell you about it. Thanks for coming in, Lauren.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good morning.
It's good to have you back in the USA.
Yeah, it was a really fun trip. We went from June 1st to June 7th to Kyushu City. I got to travel representing the Chamber of Commerce, and it was an amazing opportunity. I honestly didn't know a lot about this relationship until I got to participate in the trip.
So tell us about the relationship. Who set this up?
Well, I guess the relationship started back in 1959 between Kyushu City and Ames.
So it's a long-standing relationship.
It is, yep. In 1959, I guess a typhoon hit Japan, and the farmers there lost all of their hogs. So at that time, farmers from Iowa decided they were going to donate hogs and corn to Kyushu City to try and help them get back some of what they'd lost. And that's really what started the relationship between Kyushu City and Ames. The partner city relationship where they do the exchanges and people from Ames go there and people from Kyushu City travel here has been going on for about 24 years now. Well, there's been 24 exchanges of people. It's a longstanding relationship, which is pretty neat.
Wow, that's amazing. And so you were part of the delegation that went this year?
Correct, yep.
So tell us, what did you do over there?
They had our schedule packed.
They were ready for you?
Yes. They were amazing hosts. I think we have a lot to live up to when they come here because they provided lots of different opportunities to explore their city. We had a schedule, and every day it was blocked off of lots of different things. We went to an art museum there. That was amazing. We also got to explore some of their cultural traditions. We made this soup called Hotto, I guess, which is it was created kind of in the region that Kyushu City is. And so we made the noodles, rolled them all out, and they taught us how to do that, and then added all the vegetables to this huge pot. and then we all got to enjoy the soup together. So that was really cool.
Now, I had never actually heard of Kyushu City, so I looked it up after you told me they were our sister city. And what I learned, and you tell me if this is true, that there's some really old Zen Buddhist temples there, and that there's wine, that it's wine country.
Correct. Yep. So both of those things are true.
Okay. Sounds beautiful.
The country was just beautiful, surrounded by the mountains. Our host mom, every morning she'd get up and go on a walk at 6 a.m. And so we'd get up and go with her the wine. But just walking through the streets in Kyushu City, every morning you could see Mount Fuji. And most of the mornings it was clear, so you could the top of Mount Fuji.
Wow, like a postcard.
Yeah, it was. But they are growing fruit and especially grapes in Kyushu City. So when you'd walk, you'd see cherry trees, peach trees, and then tons of the grape vines growing and in the fall they harvest and make wine with.
Was the wine good? Did you taste it?
I did get a chance to taste the wine. I'm usually more of a red wine person, and there I liked their white better. I was impressed with
it. Is it a large city? Is it a modern city, or is it still more historic buildings?
I'd say it's pretty modern. They do, like you said, they have the temples. So anywhere there's a temple, you know, that looks like kind of history just frozen in time. But as far as their other buildings, it's pretty modern. The city size is about 33,000, I believe. So kind of like Ames without ISU students.
Does it have skyscrapers?
Nope. Not in Kyushu City. There's not skyscrapers, but taller buildings. Their city hall was an impressive building. One day we got to go there and learn about their city government and how their city council works. But it was a really bright and open, spacious building. So that was pretty cool to get to see that.
Where did you stay?
So with the program, every family that goes is paired up with another family. And so we stayed with a husband and wife who are about 69 years old. We stayed in their home, slept in a room. The tatami room has just the mats, like the straw mats on a little pad on the floor. But they were really gracious hosts. And it was really cool to actually be able to stay in a home in Japan and experience what that's like. You got to have breakfast with them every morning and sit on the floor at the table, which to us is like a coffee table, but that's how everyone in the family sits, just on the floor around the table. So,
was the bed comfortable?
Yeah. I mean, I think just by the time we got done with our long days packed with activities. I was exhausted. I would have slept on anything. But, yeah, it really was, I think, and good for your back probably.
So what's your takeaway personally? What will you remember the most?
Really, the people of Japan and Kyushu City, I think, are what I will remember the most. They were so polite and so welcoming. And sometimes, even if you couldn't have, you know, what you were trying to say, there was a language barrier, you never felt awkward or uncomfortable because they always just, you know, would work until they understood somewhat of what you were trying to say. And then just the welcoming that you felt when you got there. And then when we went to leave, the day that everyone had to meet back at the bus and the families were telling us goodbye, it was amazing. This crowd of people, just people on the street too, would stop and join the crowd, and they were waving us goodbye. And it just made me really appreciate the relationship that we have with Kyushu City. And to be a part of the exchange this year was a cool opportunity.
So putting on your Chamber of Commerce hat,
yep.
What does a program like this really mean?
I think a lot of it really is just to promote the culture of the different cities. I think both of our cities have an appreciation for what that brings and why it's important to have people in your community exposed to different cultures and then bring that back, both the understanding and ideas of what different cities are doing. For me and for the Chamber, that was the important reason to go, is just to experience that different culture and have that exchange, and then to welcome the people of Kyushu when they come here. I think it's really cool. Our host family had been to Ames and said she loved Ames and was telling us about going to Ryman Gardens and Ada Hayden. And I think it'll be fun when the people from Kyushu City come here and we can have something to relate to them and know a little bit about where they're from, too.
Puts Ames in the world, I guess. It gives us another point of reference.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yep.
Thank you for kind of giving us a little mini vacation.
Yeah, of course. I would.
Over in Japan.
Anyone's thinking about traveling to Japan, this was a great opportunity to do it. You really immerse yourself in, you know, what it's like there, and the homestay was a really cool aspect of it.
Do you have any photographs?
I do, yeah. Uh-huh. I didn't take as many as I thought I would, but I ended up with quite a few photographs, yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Before you go, Lauren, could you tell us a little bit about what's happening downtown here with internet access? We've had these gentlemen coming around to downtown businesses and saying they're from MediaCom, and that they're coming to downtown Ames. Can you explain a little bit about what's happening?
Yeah, so MediaCom is actually installing fiber optic internet access to all the businesses down here in Ames. So they have to install the fiber, and then that will allow all the businesses to have high-speed internet access. So that's what's going on. They're currently in the process of installing all of that. When it's said and done, I think it's about 62 different buildings down here in downtown, and 162 businesses that will actually be affected by that. So,
and is this a big change in terms of the quality of internet access downtown?
It really is. For downtown Ames, this is huge, and we think it's a really positive thing. When businesses are looking at Ames, a lot of times having that access to high-speed internet can make or break if their business will work here. So knowing that it's accessible in downtown Ames is a really good thing.
Is this something that was recruited by the downtown area, or did MediaCom approach Ames to do this?
You know, I'm sure it's something that's been in discussion. I don't know that Ames had directly gone out and asked for it. They could have. But it's just a good partnership between Ames and MediaCom.
So when is this all going to happen?
They're working on installing it right now, I believe. When it's all said and done, I guess I'm not exactly sure how long the process takes, but this summer, I believe, is when it'll all come together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Well, maybe we'll see if we can get MediaCom in here to explain
the ins and outs of the specific details
installing
of it
fiber
all.
Optic. I'm sure it's not a simple process. Yeah. I know they've been fussing with what to do about the alley out here. So I'm sure it's a lot of work. So anyway, thank you so much for joining us, Lauren.
Yeah.
This is your regular visit at KHOI on a monthly basis, and it's always a pleasure to have you. And I certainly thank you for bringing us to Japan for a minute.
Thanks for letting me relive my little trip there. That was fun.
It's a nice aspect of your work at the chamber to take a trip like that. That's very nice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I have been speaking with Lauren Franson from the Ames Chamber of Commerce. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I have been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. And we spoke with a number of people today. Earlier in the show, we heard from Linda Hansen, Director of Primary Health Care of Story County, and Caitlin Hamley, midwife. We also heard from Carolyn Raffensperger, Chair of the Iowa Chapter of the Sierra Club and Executive Director of the Science and Environmental Health Network. And we also heard some of the folks who were out in the flotilla protest on the Des Moines River weekend. Our show was engineered today by Cynthia McClure. Thank you, Cynthia. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. You also heard Down to the River to Pray by Allison Krauss from O Brother, Where Art Thou? And Wagaki Band with traditional Japanese modern music. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. Also remember that you can hear KHOI live online streaming at khoifm.org. And at that website, khoifm.org, you'll also find a recording of this show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster is able to post it with links to the guests and information you heard about during the show. We've made a recent change in our morning schedule. We're airing Democracy Now! From 8 until 9 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces returns at 9 a.m. We've made this change in light of rapidly changing events in the national news, and we want to make sure to provide you with the latest news in the most timely fashion that we can make possible. So please remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening to us, and we will see you again on the radio.
This spring, KHOI asked you, our loyal listeners, to help us raise money toward our operations expenses. Thanks to your generosity and that of several premier donors who established a matching grant, we were able to exceed our fundraising goal. Because of your support, we are able to continue serving Central Iowa through the broadcast of community ideas and values for the foreseeable future. If you would still like to contribute to KHOI, give us a call at 515-292-2878 or visit us online at khoifm.org and click the donate button. Thank you again for making KHOI a reality in the heart of Iowa, and we'll see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.